listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life Program for Wednesday, September 6th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Oh, good evening, Michael. Glad to be here, as always.
As always, glad to have you. And so glad to have those joining us live in the chat, and those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at MetaphysicsInstitute.org and TFUniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight's topic, we're going to be kind of delving into how to best navigate family strife, which is, I think, kind of something we can all relate to, and also something that has so many branches to other facets of life, and how to navigate really any kind of situation where you're kind of bound up in that type of thing. Family has its own unique take on this, but you can also take these skills and apply it to, you know, workplace or friendships or something like that. Yeah. And, you know, I just, here I am rambling on. Dr. Vicki, do you have any thoughts you wanted to?
Well, you know, I had a client last week who, whose brother lost his wife, leaving him alone with 4 kids, 4 boys, no less. And all the family has chipped in to help him out since last year. And the boys are not necessarily behaving well. And, of course, my client is saying, what can I do for him? You know, I really want to help these kids. But she's got her own family. And, of course, her elderly parents, well into their 80s, have been helping with these kids. And so I said to my client, there is a line that you have to draw because they're not your children. Mm. You know, and I mean, to be helpful, she even went out and stayed with her parents, with her own kids, stayed with her parents for several weeks to help out her brother and the boys. And that was a good thing. That's a nice gesture. But at the same time, her brother wasn't necessarily stepping up because everybody was taking over. And he's kind of turned a deaf ear, I guess. All the kids are in counseling, but things are getting out of hand. And I said, you know, you have your own family, and I can appreciate this is a horrific kind of a situation where 4 kids left with no mother, but that is their ride. That's, you know, that's life. And I mean, it's, again, it's horrible. I'm not saying that this isn't a tough time, but you have your own family to look after. So there's a boundary. You can lend a support from a distance and whatever that looks like, but to get too involved, you're neglecting your own family. you know. And, I mean, she's turning into a nervous wreck because everybody is so worried about all these kids. And that's, I think, it's one of those situations that does happen in life. When we think about family strife, we often think about, you know, the petty stuff of who's got these idiosyncrasies or who's got these, you know, there's one in every family kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But there are real life situations that, you know, we have to take a step back and ask ourselves how we're contributing in a good way versus overstepping our boundaries. And I think boundaries is the first law, universal law, that we have to consider. You know, and that goes for grandparents to grandkids. They're not my children, you know. you know, can lend support, but in a good way. It's, in other words, don't give unsolicited advice, which is Dr. Kelly, one of Dr. Kelly's big adages. You don't give unsolicited advice. And fair enough, if somebody's in trouble, I say, can I offer a suggestion? Can I give you an idea? You know, or have we thought about it this way? But respecting that everybody is very different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I'd like to start off this talk, is there's real life situations that people are dealing with, and it's really hard to know the difference between empathy and sympathy. And of course, that's in the inner oracle cards. You know, sympathy is kind of inert. Empathy takes an action, but the action is more like, what can I help you with, as opposed to taking over, saying, oh, well, I know how I would feel. Mm-hmm. You can't assume to know how other people feel.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that dovetails very nicely with the thought that I had, that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to any of this. Mm-hmm. You know, family strife can be a lot of different things. It could be what you might term more kind of normal friction in a family, idiosyncrasies, habits, things like that. And, you know, it could be a cycle of dysfunction and toxicity that goes from generation to generation. In fact, I was thinking about this topic. I was with some acquaintances who were talking about their family, and it was, you know, very, in a lot of ways, very alien to me, talking about how everybody in the family tries to use, you know, each other and, you know, doesn't really support one another and happy to throw them under the bus and blame them, and very combative and, you know, very almost predatory description of family. And, of course, he felt bound to it because, you know, it's his family. But I was just thinking, you know, you don't owe loyalty to people that don't deserve it or that are abusing these relationships. And I think that, you know, family strife means a lot of different things. And we talked a bit earlier about it can encompass all kinds of things, like your work families and different, maybe a friendship group. You know, I've been part of different kind of friend groups where, you know, one of the members of that friend group is toxic, where it's, you know, unhealthy to be around them.
I go back to some of Dr. Kelly's material, and that's why we're all here, you know, mm-hmm. the IMHS and the church. Is don't do for others what they can and ought to do for themselves, you know, and don't have others do for you what you ought to do for yourself, which
Absolutely.
Is different than, which is different than sharing, you know, it's value for value and, you know, kind of interactive, but knowing that there are some very simple rules that we can all look to and adjust ourselves with that, that doesn't happen and it doesn't go toxic.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's these principles and these philosophies that are the perfect tool to kind of to at least protect yourself. If you are in a toxic family like the one that I described a moment ago, you know, using these healthy boundaries and, you know, understanding the importance of not taking ownership for somebody else, not enabling somebody else. Mm-hmm. And not doing for someone else what they should be doing for themselves. These are all wonderful tools that will help you set healthy boundaries and will help you kind of maintain your own peace of mind. And one thing that always got me was the perpetual cycle. You know, you'll look at these families and it's just generation after generation of the same dysfunction. And at what point are you going to stop the cycle? And of course, you know, are we part of that cycle? So.
Audra has just said in the chat, it can be hard to set boundaries with family, especially immediate family, and also sad to have set boundaries with some family members. And I just want to say it's only sad because we're grieving for what we don't get out of it.
Absolutely.
And that's why it becomes sad. If I have the right to make decisions for myself in my life, then so does somebody else. I may not like it, and it's sad that I have to set boundaries, but they are living their life, and I want it to be something different. You know, I want it to be healthier, happier. Why can't we get along? You know, but and I think the other thing, too, that very often happens, and again, Dr. Kelly would say don't catch the ball, is in it's when I respond in a certain way with a boundary, I might be attacked for setting a boundary, but I'm not the one who threw the ball.
Right.
Well, you know.
And it's also... And
that's hard.
It is, especially with immediate family. You share a home. It's not something that you can, you know, leave the family reunion and, you know, collect yourself. It's something that's present in your daily life. Yeah. And that's where it's so important to maintain healthy boundaries. And I think that even in good circumstances, even in a healthy, healthy family dynamic, you still set boundaries. You still put into place these things that ensure the continued, you know, healthy dynamic in that family.
And I think if I can inject here, I think what's really hard to do, and I think we think of boundaries as hard and set fast rules. Boundaries might be something as simple as I know how that family member responds or reacts to certain things, so I'm going to soften it or not share the information. Or I'm going to wait until the appropriate time to share that information if I have to at all. Because we can understand that everybody's so different, and so-and-so's like this, so-and-so's like that, this one's like that, and it's like playing chess. And it seems kind of cold and kind of calculated at times, but you're also trying to get along. So those are a different kind of boundaries, and it's kind of like a passive-aggressive boundary in a way. But understanding, let's say you're dealing with a funeral in a family, and you know how certain people respond differently to a funeral, then it's being sensitive to that and having the wherewithal to know how to navigate and manage people. And again, that sounds like, why can't we just get to the chase? But we're being sensitive to how people will behave. Go ahead.
Just a quick note. It just makes me think of a more sophisticated way of picking your battles.
Yeah. Dr. Edward is saying in his family, it was like you were disrespecting them if you set boundaries. They were believers that parents, uncles, aunts, and other members of a higher hierarchy had the right to violate your boundaries, but it's not acceptable the other way around. Sad, but they're all gone, but I rarely miss any of them. And I totally get that. I remember when I turned about 40, and aunts and uncles would still treat you like you're a child. But like I'm 40 years old, and you know, it's like, when can I have a say here? It's like you don't have a say in that hierarchy because they still look at you as you're a 5-year-old. But I've raised a family, I've done all this, and they think, no,
it's their issue. They aren't able to see you as you are now. They can only see you as they initially saw you.
Yeah, you know, and it doesn't happen. But it's. Again, where people have boundaries. When I set boundaries for the family, and I understand, Edward, when I set boundaries about my life and my family, oh, there was huge backlash. And I'm just not living with that kind of behavior in my life. And so I had to step back and make a really serious decision. And I'm not saying everybody should be hard-nosed like that, but there's a culture within a family that you have to decide if you want to be a part of that culture and you can survive and really thrive within that. Oh, let's say somebody's a little OCD and this one is a little bad. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the culture in a family. Let's say it's a very religious family, as you've been through yourself, Michael. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, no, I can get along with them from over here if they accept me, but I can't be a part of that show.
Absolutely. And we can't be afraid to branch out and become our own true self.
Yeah.
You know, I also think about, this isn't something that I have any kind of firsthand experience of. I only know of it kind of culturally and from some personal acquaintances, but I know that, sorry, got some feedback there. Don't know if it came across, but I often also think about people that must struggle in, you know, perhaps a particularly fundamentalist religious family or a maybe old-fashioned family, people that are, you know, homosexual or on the spectrum or non-binary, what have you, that have to kind of grow up in this environment where not only are there no boundaries, but you're being consistently, you know, maybe denigrated for trying to show your true self, or you're afraid to, or, you know, sometimes people will cut you out for that. But again, you don't have to. It's very difficult because there is something about family that makes it very hard. But at the same time, it is, you don't have to buy into it. You don't have to catch the ball, as it says. You can be your own person and realize that, you know, yes, they're family, and yes, it might hurt in terms of not having that kind of bond, but you will find that. We will find that with friends and people that you meet in this life, and they become your family. So, you know, another dynamic.
I want to go back to how we grieve because we had an expectation. We had a hope. You know, we had a hope it would be a certain way. I mean, honestly, I wish I had sisters I could go hang out with and go for lunch with and, you know, be sisters and stuff. But I don't have that. And there was a period, I don't anymore, but a long period where I was grieving that. And that's a natural thing. So we think that, you know, it's so sad. And then it makes us angry and all those other things. But it's because we have an expectation. And I'm sure they feel the same way about me. Right. So I'm not speaking one-sided. I'm speaking they probably feel the same way. Mm-hmm. If I were a different way, I would get along with them, you know, and vice versa. But we're just very all different people. Now, in ordinarily, people can work these things out just by understanding who they are. You know, I have two daughters who are polar opposites. Like, they couldn't be more different, but they are the best of friends. And the key in that relationship is respect. And
absolutely.
When we have a respect, and again, wherever it's placed, a respect for someone, then we're able to, you know, kind of bend and not sweat the small stuff. And how does Dr. Kelly put it? You know, if it's a matter of you know, opinion, then, oh well. But if it's a matter of law and principle, then, of course, you know, we have to stand in who we are and what we believe. But these other things can breathe. They can, you know, kind of bend and move because they understand they're different, but they respect that they're different. It's just opinions. Oh, well, I'm this way and you're in that way, so who cares? Because it's not a matter of hardcore principle, we draw a line.
Absolutely. And I think respect is very important. And respect and accepting each other for who we are and not for who we want them to be, and vice versa. If somebody cannot accept you for who you are, then it's not going to be a healthy relationship no matter how, you know, how you look at it. Earlier in the chat, Wendy had mentioned being raised to respect your elders. You know, that's how it goes. It doesn't matter if you're an adult, they're still your elders. And I agree that, you know, we should respect our elders, you know, but respect does not mean always deference, and it does not mean that you have to.
Not if they're a jerk.
Right. So, I mean, like Dr. Vicky, I respect you, but sometimes I don't always listen to that advice because I'm like, gosh, it's kind of mean.
Oh,
I don't know.
Come on. I know everything.
You know, I'm just ribbing you.
And again, I think that we have to understand that when we have a basic set of rules that we follow in life. And I know in way previous shows I've mentioned this, that, you know, every family has that drunk Uncle Joe who shows up at events drunk and, you know, misbehaving. And people just tolerate that. Well, I don't find that acceptable.
Right.
Because it sets a bad example for children.
Very much so.
And all the other people. So if we can say to Uncle Joe, you're not allowed here unless you're sober and unless you behave yourself, then we're setting a very clear boundary. But it has to be a number of people on board for that to happen. I mean, I can't be the only one in a family of 20 who says, I don't want him here because he sets a bad example. People have to kind of agree that that's not acceptable. So old Uncle Joe says, yeah, I do kind of cause a problem. You know? And that's why you have to stand by a principle. And Dr. Edwards said he had an uncle like that. So yeah. Did I.
It makes me think. Don't you always hear that, you know, if you look around and, you know, every family has one, and if you don't recognize it, it's you. So my family doesn't really have that kind of uncle. But then I'm thinking, wait, am I that uncle?
You know, I had an uncle like that. The last big family event I went to many years ago, he was totally sober at the beginning, and nobody was serving alcohol. But he got drunker and drunker, and a couple of us scoured the house for every crevice. We even looked in, you know, light sockets in the washing machine and the dryer. We're looking, where is his stash? Because he got drunker and drunker and drunker the whole day. And I thought, wow, this is a mystery how this guy does that. And, you know, he's long since passed now, bless his heart, but he was the one who would inevitably start an argument or a fight.
Yeah.
You know, like within 4 or 5 hours, man, the guy's going to go at it.
Yep.
And I think what's so interesting to me is even since he's passed, people only talk about the good side of him. And I'm thinking, wow, I remember him as a drunk. You know, like,
yeah.
So we tend to buffer the negative when it's, you know, kind of,
yeah, it's a cultural thing.
It makes us feel better.
Yeah. And I guess it comes down to that kind of, maybe it's even, you know, beyond culture and maybe just a human nature thing where you know, you don't want to speak ill of the dead, so to speak. Right. But you also, why should we be required to write and believe in a fiction just because it might make some people more comfortable?
Well, you know, and because I don't live that way to buffer a truth in what I see, mm-hmm. I'm not always on people's Christmas list. And I'm going, what? You guys talking about him that way? He was a drunk.
Yeah.
He always started fights. Like, well, oh, why do you have to be that way? You always bring up the negative. No, that's all I remember about him.
Well, can you, like, remind me of some of the positive? Because I'm losing it, you know?
I don't remember any.
Well, it can go the other way, too.
Dr. Zach says it's romanticizing the past. Yeah. And totally, thanks for that,
absolutely,
Zach.
And that is so very true of humanity. And we don't just do it with our families and people we know in our own lives. We do it with everything. The past is always romanticized. You know, all these people that I wish I could live in old West times. Like, no, you don't. You really don't. But people romanticize everything about the past, and that includes your own family. That includes behaviors that people will ignore after somebody's passed, you know, the toxic traits. And that also gets fed into the entire cycle of dysfunction that goes generation to generation. If it's not called out as an abnormal behavior, then a lot of people that are still deciding how they're going to live and what kind of behaviors they pick up will pick it up as a normal behavior.
You know, and this is where each of us, and look, I was just having a conversation with somebody yesterday about this. I have really been trying to figure out why some people are, and again, I don't mean to stereotype, but you know that term being a Karen or being a Ken, you know, where they outburst and people are not acting right.
Right.
And all their behaviors have gone bonkers. And I said, really, I think what I have brought it down to is being self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
That some people do take the time to be more aware of self. It's like, no, I have to check in with myself. Don't behave that way.
Right.
You know, I've got a thinking process. Or, why did I just say that? And go, you know, be brave enough to go and say, I'm sorry I said that. That didn't come out right. So it's about the difference between self-awareness. And I like to believe that everyone in this group is taking the time and making efforts to become more self-awake. And it's not easy to navigate family. It's easy to navigate the workplace. It's not easy to navigate, you know, life. It could be even in the shopping center. But it's knowing who you are. And again, if you take some of the material, and maybe not all of it, but in those moments, take some of the material that Dr. Kelly has shared through the, you know, Thomas Francis and IMHS program and say, oh, you know, and really take it to heart. I know it's kind of a different way of saying the same thing what we already know, but to remember that this can be dealt with. You just have to make decisions and be responsible along the way. But your first responsibility is to yourself and what you can live with.
Absolutely, and well said. And
I know I'm good, hey?
And thank God. If we had to depend on my wisdom, be a lot of dead air tonight. But no, I can't. But no, absolutely. And I think that one of the biggest things about a family that is dysfunctional is that you have some people in that family that can't accept who they are. They don't know who they are, and they're in constant strife, and they take it out on other people as well.
Yeah. You know, Wendy just asked a really good question. How much should you stay out of a situation with a family member? And I guess it's the type of family member and the type of situation. Wendy.
Right. I mean, if it's immediate family, that's a heck of a lot harder. If it's extended family and you're an adult child living away,
yeah,
it's easier to compartmentalize.
I think if there are very basic things that we have to understand. If you know somebody's committing a crime, and even somebody committing a crime against young people or children, then I think we have to call the appropriate authorities. It doesn't mean you're involved.
Right.
It just means that you know in good conscience that you're making an effort to bring in somebody who can deal with that in a certain
Very
way.
True. And so, when it comes to kids and, you know, their protection, that is paramount, because at that point, it's not about you encroaching on somebody else's right to live their life as they want. You're protecting somebody in a very literal way.
You know, and Audra just said, I step in when I'm right. LOL. That's funny. It's true. But and Wendy is just saying she has a sister that needs a life check. Oh, you know, you think she needs a life check, and perhaps you're correct, but that sister isn't to the point where she thinks she needs a life check. If you say, is there something I can do for you? Can I help out in some way? And she said no, and she's going down a dark road. I'm afraid this is where I say, that is her right to her life. And I know it's so tough, isn't it, when you see somebody spiraling.
It is. And I think
it's not in your control.
It's
you
not.
Can be an advocate. You can be a support. I saw it at the hospital one day when this husband was trying to find his wife who was spiraling. She's manic and went out of control, and then the daughter's looking for her, and everybody in the hospital is looking for this woman. And, you know, in talking to him, he said she's done this before, she needs to be in the hospital. When they found her, she was intentionally hiding, and intentionally she didn't want to go in the hospital. Now, being a manic depressive and being off her meds, she's over the charts. Everybody wants to save her. I get it. I totally get it that you want to save somebody you love. And there's so many good things about this woman as a mother, as a wife. But how far is too far? And if she doesn't want to, then everybody has to make a decision. These are very tough decisions to make. And that's there. When I say you call in a specialist to help you navigate that. Maybe she won't go into the emergency department, get back on meds and get the care. What you can do then is go to a social worker, go to your family doctor, go to somebody to say, how do I deal with this? Because it's tearing the family apart. And that's when, and again, I can't tell you what the right decision is in that, because you don't want to lose somebody you love who's right. having a mental crisis. And I don't have the right answer. I'm just saying there's always some other kind of support out there, and you know in good conscience that you've done everything that you could.
Right.
And if somebody's on self-destruct, then that's nothing you can do about that.
Well, that's very true. And I think the other side to that, you know, it's depending on the severity of the situation, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all, like we said earlier.
Yeah.
But you could offer, you know, have you thought about it this way or anything that you had mentioned earlier in the discussion, those ways that you can, you know, perhaps offer suggestions at the right time without giving unsolicited advice per se. But the other side to that is if the person is not ready to change, then it will not happen.
Right.
You have the individual that's going through that has to be ready. They have to want it. They have to be in a position where they themselves are going to be an engine of that change. They can't have it foisted upon them.
Yeah, Dr. Sack just said that in the chat. It's the same with an addict. You can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped.
Yeah, great minds think alike.
Yeah, and so it's speaking of Dr. Zach, we're going to start taking cards here in a moment. I really enjoyed this
that time already.
But why don't you inject here?
I actually was.
Not
yeah.
Next week.
We have a very special guest, a guest that's going to put both Dr. Vicky and I to shame in their brilliance and eloquence. But Dr. Zach himself is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about moon cycles and some of the things that I'm very much looking forward to. I know, Dr. Vicky, you're a bit more informed about kind of the things that we're going to be going through, but I'm really looking forward to it. Can't wait.
Well, the last time I messaged with Zach, we were going to talk about new moon and full moon phases. Now, he is the astrology expert, energy expert, and I'm excited to, because I had said to him some time ago, would you come on? And I'm glad to hear from Michael that they've been in touch and he's coming on next week. So we're going to talk about cycles, moon cycles, and whatever else Zach has to offer.
Oh, we're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, anytime that I don't have to think of things to say, then, hey, that's a win.
Yeah.
But cool. I always love good conversation. So really much looking forward to it. And, of course, I also want to throw out that we are going to wrangle Dr. Doug Kelly into having an appearance here as well. And, again, if you have any questions that have been on your mind, throw them in chat or email me at drmichael@icmhchurch.org, and we will be happy to go over that as well. So moving on to the cards for this evening. I think if I caught it right, did we have Jerry as our first card tonight?
Yeah, we do. Jerry's next.
All right, Jerry, I have number 31, Sacred Obligations. Let's see. A sacred obligation is a sacrosanct duty that any higher being would render for the highest good of all concerned. Sacred obligations include do no harm, do right, pay it forward, uphold individual value, value all life, extend tolerance and equality, control and change only what one is entitled to control and change, evolve and grow as a human being with higher awareness, promote knowledge, not fear, and more. Continue to aspire to your highest good by recognizing and fulfilling your sacred obligations.
Ace of Spades, Jerry. I love that. Sacred obligations. Okay. If there's a project or effort that you're making in some way, it's just saying that there's a couple of challenges. But remember what is important to you and how you regard it. It's like get over a stumbling block kind of thing. And success is assured. So, you know, when you're in the face of something, Michael, and you've done all the basic steps but things aren't moving, you think, well, what did I do to myself? And it says, just keep going. The obligation is to yourself first. And know that there's just a hump And once you get over that, then you'll be awesome. So I say keep going.
All right. We have Tabitha next. And Tabitha, I have for you number 43, expediency. Timing is everything. Some things call for expediency. Others require us to slow down. If you have a problem, you can take care of it now or suffer longer and still take care of it later. It takes courage to face important matters when timing and opportunity avails, and wisdom to know when to slow down to assess the correct actions before acting promptly. For success in anything, do what you should do when you should do it.
And a lot of it has to do with communication, Tabitha, at the Page of Cups. And any of the pages to me are the communicators, and it's kind of a symbol then, you know, indicates what kind of communication. Expediency is, and the Page of Hearts is knowing when to speak from your heart and what's true to you, and knowing when to step back. So even though something's really important to you, it's not appropriate to speak of in the situation, but more of a wait, and then you'll know the moment that you have to, you know, act on it, you know, quickly. So it's watching for the signs of knowing when to move forward and when to step back. That's, I know it's kind of a tough one to navigate at times, but use your good senses about it.
All right. And we have Dr. Edward next. Dr. Edward, for you, I have number 37, groundedness. Remain grounded by looking for evidence that supports or refutes claims or beliefs. Have a compelling and defensible basis for your beliefs, especially esoteric beliefs. An absence or denial of evidence does not assure a truthful conclusion. Be willing to examine beliefs, assumptions, and opinions, and weigh them against facts. Suspend judgment until you have considered all of the facts or have more facts to uncover. Adjust opinions when new facts are found.
Oh, the moon. That's a mystery. Edward, groundedness in the moon. I would say sometimes we're walking in the dark, you know, and we only have the moon kind of like to guide us, and it's really intuitive. It's often secretive. But grounded with regard to that is always having that touchstone to go back to. So no matter what you kind of think or feel or what's in front of you, go back to what you know to be true. And then follow your intuition. And it's just like this, you know it when you know it. It's not what you think or what you feel. It's you just know it when you know it. So that's what I say about being grounded is kind of being more awake to, I just know. I don't know if that makes sense, but it makes sense to me.
Made me think of Dr. Edward's story. I think it was last week where he was talking about using the moon to navigate his way through a city.
Good memory.
All right, Dr. Jeff.
We have Jeff. Yep.
I have number 7, self-mastery. To know who you are and why you are who you are is self-actualization. To choose and walk your own path is self-determination, giving inner peace. Not allowing others to dictate your true behavior is self-control. Remain true to your convictions. This is self-mastery towards the path of self-completeness.
You know, Jeff, I pulled the 8 of spades and I said, what's that about? And so I pulled another one. It's the Empress. So self-mastery. You might feel like you're at a bit of a stalemate at the moment of not certain if you have feeling like you have the power to move in a direction, but it's a matter of the ideas. So Empress is all about fertility, right? The ideas that we have and what we nurture, and it's how things then grow. So if you've been feeling like, what is this about? I'm not sure where this is going. Just remember what you had before, that self-mastery, what you've been building, and then take a moment to like do a little meditation and say, okay, this is where we're going, and now is the next step, because the next step will reveal itself to you. Oof, that was big.
Good.
I got chills with that, Michael.
I like it.
I know. Awesome.
All right.
Audra?
I was going to say, I think we have Audra next, and I have number 44 for you, attitude or disposition. Passed it. Enthusiasm or an agreeable disposition, along with good manners, assures individual happiness that inevitably influences others. Drawing this card may indicate a time to review a change in attitude regarding someone or something in your life. This can be positive or negative. Be proactive. Ask yourself, how hard can it be? A can-do attitude makes it happen.
You know, the Five of Diamonds, I really see as a duality in so many ways. So it can be one or the other here, Audra. It's like when you move forward and somebody's following you to kind of hold you back. Or it is that somebody else is leaving and you're wondering, where does that leave you? And it could be this attitude, disposition. Wendy says you had this back in February. That's interesting. So it's I think checking in with yourself about, you know, that don't hold yourself back and don't worry about what other people are doing. I think this is really what comes to mind, and this is typical, especially in family dynamics, what we were talking about earlier, Michael, is when somebody says, oh, I'm so excited, I'm going to go do this, and I have this going on, I'm going to school, or I got this job, and you go, oh, that's great. How does that affect me? You know, because we like things to stay the same, you know, but then when we want to make a change, other people want life to stay the same. So keeping that in mind, that change is inevitable, and it's how we regard that, what our attitude is, and what our disposition is about that. So let's just checking in, that's all.
All right. We have our card keeper herself, Wendy, next. Wendy, for you I have wild card number 8, freedom.
Oof, good one.
I don't know that we pulled this one in a while, too. And, Wendy, thank you for keeping track. We've pulled a couple of cards this evening that I haven't seen in a while. Freedom is a state of being. It is an unencumbered mind that can remain open and move forward. Freedom is the ability to recreate the self, shedding old ideas that no longer serve any purpose for present and future evolution. Freedom is the knowing of who and what one is as a free and sovereign being of the universe. Freedom means one can be or do anything one wants within the limits of do no harm, do right. Good card.
Wendy, this is so big. I pulled the 9 of spades, so that 9 of swords, and I went, whoa, there's some grieving going on here. And I said, well, what's that about? So I pulled another one that's the 5 of spades. So that 5 of swords. So... there's always a rite of passage when we make a change in our life. And it can feel, we do sense that it's like things aren't the same today as they were yesterday, but you kind of miss certain things about yesterday. And you're overcoming a challenge. So victory is assured. It's just that segue, like crossing this bridge of feeling more of who you are. Freedom is huge. Freedom is... again, that being that free, sovereign being of the universe. And yes, we consider other people. We consider family. We consider, you know, our coworkers. We consider our responsibilities. But you are free to be who and what you are. But even as you're learning your freedom, you're grieving the old you. And I can totally attest that this can be a tough moment of... I know you said in the chat there's so many changes going on in your life right now. And we grieve the comforts that we had yesterday. You know, it was familiar. We felt we were good managers. We're controlling things. But things are different today. And we're having to adapt. So I say you're all over this. This is just a moment in time where you're learning more of who you are.
That's I like this. All right, and I believe it's our last card of the evening is Dr. Zach. If I miss somebody, please let me know. But Dr. Zach, for you, I have number two, esteem and validation. Self-esteem is self-worth based on internal expectations and validation, not to be confused with them-esteem, which is self-worth based on external expectations and validation. That is, what others think. High self-confidence is not the same as high self-esteem. Self-validation is the highest regard you can give to yourself. Fully experience the truths of your own path.
Well, what I love about this, Zach, and you'll totally appreciate it, is the Seven of Hearts. So that Seven of Cups, and in my reality, because I know Zach has his own interpretations of the tarot, but bear with me here. I think we're on a bit of the same wave, is understanding the difference between what's an elusive kind of idea or dream versus the reality of it, and what is it that we're dreaming of. So that esteem and validation with that Seven of Hearts to me is, you don't need anybody else to validate you, Zach. And I know you know that, but we all have those moments where we don't feel like we're right there. So that we have to have that moment of just sitting with ourselves, and it's like the difference between having a confidence in the world versus the self-certainty in ourself. Because I can be confident but not self-certain. And that's, I think, what this is saying to you, is be self-certain and just follow your dream, knowing what your dream is. I think that's exciting.
I love it. That is a good message. And one thing I've been thinking about is, I listen to, you know, kind of, I think about these cards, I read through them, I listen to the tarot cards. All of this applies to the discussion that we had tonight.
Interesting, yeah.
Absolutely. All of these skills are centered around safeguarding our own happiness, being able to expand our awareness, and being able to be true to ourselves, and setting healthy boundaries. And that is key for any successful family dynamic.
You know, I think that it's tough. And the older we get, we change. And I'd like to remind everybody, too, what was important to you yesterday is not going to be important today or tomorrow. And as we get older, and I know there's many of you on here can appreciate this, what you thought was important when you were in your 20s is not important to you when you're 30. And it's certainly not important to you when you're 40. And then you get older and you say, oh, wow, I was sweating the small stuff. So we're evolving. And I think a lot of that has to do with our biology, you know, and we're changing. It's like when you're an adolescent, hormones are crazy. You know, by the time you're 60, you're saying, what's the fuss? and it's everything in life that we learn, you know, throughout the journey, that we just want to become better human beings, that is going to be also age appropriate, and or age appropriated is more like it. You know, it's Michael, what you thought of in your early 20s that was important. Who knew that you'd be taking in, you know, these rescue dogs and having a home of your own and building this life for yourself? You couldn't have known that. See?
Well, that's so very true. Although, in a lot of ways, I very much am the same person I was in my 20s. Maybe more evolved, more refined, perhaps. But I still go out of my way to buy lightsabers, and I still do childish things. Like, I got to keep myself young a little bit, immature.
We all do. I mean, that's part of it. I have a friend of mine visiting for a few days from, you know, where I used to live in Alberta, and we're having a great time. And there's part of us that's really kind of childlike, but we're also in sync with, who cares? You know? And it's, yeah, I can't because I want to.
Yeah. You know?
And it's fun to kind of do the full circle of, you know, just being who we are. And we've laughed a lot playing card games and going out shopping and for lunch. And it's just this, what do you want to do? We don't care. And what's so fun about that is nothing is rigid, nothing's set in stone. It's just playing it by ear. And it's like what you do when you're a kid. I know some people. I have a son-in-law who lives by an itinerary. They're going on a trip. It's all an itinerary. And I don't live by itinerary. Maybe I should, but I don't. And we're not doing that either. It's a fun thing. So I would like to remind everybody tonight that no matter what you're going through, and it could be family, it could be work, it could be life, finances, whatever it is, take a moment to find that bit of joy, that something that is your touchstone for keeping you, you. Just do you. Don't try to be anybody else. Just do you.
Good advice. Good advice. And as we kind of wrap up this evening, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't offer congratulations to Dr. Edward, because he's recently added on to his already illustrious titles. He's added some letters to his name there. We have Dr. Edward Wong III, Doctorate of Ministry, PhD, CSC, CLP, as of September the 1st. So I want to offer a hearty congratulations to you, Dr. Edward.
You know, and kudos to Dr. Edward, who just, he's an insatiable learner and is curious. And we know that you've had some health challenges, Edward. You just keep growing and learning. And as I said to my friend, at Disney, we always learn something. And when you seek it out and say, I just want to keep learning, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how sick you are, how the stress you have, if you learn every single day, you're keeping your mind open and ready for anything that comes.
Absolutely. And keeps life fun. Keeps life interesting. And I just have to echo Wendy here. Wendy and Chad put in that Dr. Edward is such an inspiration. Everything you've gone through and still going strong. So I want to echo her congratulations as well. Absolutely what you said, Dr. Vicky, too. So
it's awesome.
I love it. You know, I love everything about it.
We have such a great group here, Michael.
We do. We do. And that's another thing. You know, if you find that you are in the midst of a, at times, painful, toxic, dysfunctional family, remember, you have other families out there. We have, you know, this family. We have this community that we built. We have, you know, I look forward to seeing you every week. I'm invested in your lives. It's it is very real. And, you know, thank you to all of you for that. And just remember that you don't have to put up with toxicity and dysfunction.
No. I would also like to just add, I know week after week we have these regulars, and maybe there's 10, 12 of us. 10 or 12 of us is huge when you think about the ripple effect and
Absolutely.
How you influence others. And welcome, Andrew. Andrew is new to the group tonight. Thanks for being here. There are people who listen in the archives. We know that that influences. So you think, oh, just a small, tight group. It's huge. And Michael and I are, you know, we're not blind to the fact that, you know, we, again, that small group, we know that ripple, and we understand how big that can be and how important it is to have this family and expand the family, but you expand it by being yourself in the world.
Absolutely. And don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. And as somebody I'm very fond of is fond of saying, don't let the bullies push you around.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you, everyone. We always appreciate you. And Dr. Vicky, I appreciate you. And thank you for being here with me.
Thanks, Michael. You're awesome.
I appreciate it. Well, until we see you next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.